This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station. The Property Show on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. You are listening to The Property Show on The Morning Run. I'm Shahid Abdullah. For those who are interested in investing on properties abroad, you may be wondering whether it is wise to do so, especially with the current economic climate such as the Brexit as well as trade war. Joining me on The Property Show to share some of the concerns that needs to be considered when investing in properties abroad is Virata Thaivasigamuni, the Executive Director of CSI Prop. Welcome to the show again, Virata. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks, Shari. It's good to be back here again.
So, Virata, in light of these uncertainties surrounding the Brexit and trade war negotiation today, is investing in properties abroad still an attractive option? And are there any silver linings?
All right, yeah, no, Shari, as you said, of course, there's a lot of challenges locally, of course. You know, the property markets here and the stock market has been a bit sluggish. So people are, of course, looking to diversify. In terms of silver lining, I guess, everyone's been looking at the Brexit issues where the pound has been quite weak. I think when we think of a currency perspective, where the pound used to trade for about 6 to 7 ringgit to a pound, today at 5.3, it's certainly an all-time low. And many of us, of course, complain that the ringgit hasn't performed very well. But fortunately for us, I think Brexit has affected the pound a lot more. And so we actually have an advantage in that. Yeah. So when people think of uncertainties, I think they often think about the economic challenges and so on. But I think if you cut through that, the main concern that we have to always look at is the housing supply and demand. And in the UK right now, I think that's a very, very strong period where there's a shortage of 4 million houses, right? So when there's a 4 million shortage itself, property prices are essentially only going one way, and that's up, right? With the reverse of what we see in Malaysia with the overhang of properties and so on, I think we've certainly had a challenge with correction in properties or so on. So I think that's the opportunity to look at. That's the silver lining where, yes, there may be challenges around, but there's also an opportunity.
Right. So before we begin, would you be able to share what are some of the factors that should be considered when evaluating the risk from investing in properties abroad?
Yeah. So I think three main areas comes to mind immediately, of course. I think currency, the economy itself, and the developer track records. Right. In times of uncertainty, I think we have to realize that when it's international properties, it's not just the property market itself, but it's also the currency. So if the property markets move in one direction, but the currency moves on the other side, then potentially you might offset or even, you know, lose out. So Brexit, right now, of course, people tend to see that as an opportunity because the pound is trading at a low. The Aussie dollar as well currently today is trading at 2.9 versus the highs last year at about 3.4. So there's an opportunity. But, you know, as the news comes along over the next number of months or years and things change, there's an exposure there in currency. When it comes to the economy, people are a little more familiar with, I think, the local economy. But it's very important to understand that the housing market, again, supply and demand is the most important factor when it comes to the economy. What happens in the UK or Australia in general is not as important as what's happening in that particular city, that particular suburb or so on. So they really need to do their research and really say, again, yes, maybe a 4 million shortage in the UK, but that particular city, is that a shortage in that area itself? And finally, of course, when we talk about developer track record, in times of uncertainty, I think the balance sheet of a developer is very important. They need to be able to ride out these storms. When the pound is weaker, they may be a bit more exposed. Their margins are tightened. So again, I think that's something to be concerned about. Of course, there's a lot of other areas when it comes to taxation, financing, legals, and so on, which also is affected when it comes to uncertainties. It might be challenging to get financing or so on and so forth. But of course, I don't think we have time to go into a lot of that.
Sure. Okay, so let's explore those issues one by one. So on the subject of currency, you spoke about the weak pound as a result of Brexit is to our advantage, especially when it comes to investing. So another currency that is in question is the ringgit. So can you help us make sense? How does our weak ringgit comes into play when investing properties abroad?
Yes. You know, Shari, that's a great question. Actually, when we do a lot of our investment talks and part of our investment guide that we've put together as well, one of the segments there, we actually look at currency differences from 1995 to right now, how the property markets have done, and then overlay that with currency. Right, and of course, as you mentioned, the ringgit, fortunately for us and being Malaysians, we've had a pretty rough patch over the number of years here. The silver lining, again, going that to that catchphrase, is that although we've done very poorly compared to the Aussie dollar in the last 20 years or so, the US dollar, the Sing dollar, I mean, parity back then and now 3-1, right? The one currency that I think we can stand to really hedge in spite of the poor performance with ringgit, is the pound because of Brexit, right? So that, I think, is the advantage. The Aussie dollar is slightly weaker now than where it was at 3.4 last year. But compared to where it was 20 years ago, of course, we're looking at, you know, two ringgit, now pretty much three, right? So you're right. We've got very little options to hedge.
Okay, so we understand that there is shortage in the property market in the UK. What is the situation in the Australian property market?
You know, interesting with Australia, I think, you know, the economy hasn't been affected as significantly as other parts. I think Australia has been recession-proof for over 26 years or so now. And, you know, if we look at today's markets, the interest rates have been low. There's been incentive for home buyers and so on. And the market's not really reacting to that, I think. But yes, there has been a headline negative growth in Australia, particularly if you look at the major cities like Sydney and Melbourne. But I would say that is really due to more of a recent change with the tightening of credit. So credit has been affected in the sense that it's harder for people to get financing, and that has essentially affected the property market itself. But if you look at, again, specific areas, and I think that's where, you know, people have to really understand the markets, where it's not about averages in a country or a city. It's about looking at the different areas to invest in. And if you break that down and you look at different suburbs or so on, the city centre in Melbourne, for instance, and the Western Corridor are actually posting positive growths, even upwards of about 10% a year, while the headline says that Melbourne has a negative growth. So there's certainly a lot of opportunity. And again, it's about doing your research, understanding what's happening, and driving down to the specific locality itself.
Okay, so it is important not to generalize investment of a country as a whole, rather to consider specific investment characteristics of each location.
Yeah, to look at the specific areas, I guess.
Right.
So country averages or city averages are nice headlines, but one area in that same city versus another is actually could be negative on one side, positive on the other. I'll give you maybe a UK example as well.
Sure.
In London, the markets are flatlined, right? On average, everyone says it's zero growth. Some areas are positive, some are negative. The moment you look out to other parts as well, for instance, the Northern Powerhouse, Manchester, Liverpool, so Birmingham's in the West Midlands, they're actually posting positive 6-7% growth since 2016 after the Brexit vote. So again, not to just be caught up by headlines, but to look into the actual locations itself.
Okay, brilliant. So what are the considerations that you have to make when deciding on the type of properties that you wish to invest?
Yeah, sure. I think when it's times of economic uncertainty, which certainly we have all around here, you know, most investors would think of going towards more safe havens, or I should say safer investments. So bonds are important, but people look at yield essentially. So in property markets, that's looking at not so much capital growth, but being more concerned about the rental yields. So when it comes to London, I would say, instead of going to the typical areas where yields are very low and we wait long-term for capital growth, for instance, Canary Wharf, where, you know, the financial markets are a bit more affected by Brexit, it'd be better to go outside to the zone 3, 5s or so on, where the average person is living and the yields are stronger, or go out to the regions, which are a bit more insulated to Brexit and the yields are even higher, about 5-7%. On the Australian context, again, it's also, again, going to places where the locals have a demand for. The CBD may not be the places where the locals will buy, but they certainly rent. And if you go to the Western Corridors, Northern Corridors, that's where they're buying a lot. So you go to those areas and then you'll be insulated because the yields are strong. And you can ride out the storm and then potentially then wait for the capital growth later on.
All right. So I'm speaking to Virata Taivasigamoni, the Executive Director of CSI Prop. We'll continue more on the discussion of risk to consider when deciding to invest in properties abroad after these messages. So keep it here at BFM 89.9. Good morning. You're listening to The Property Show on The Morning Run. I'm Sharit Sabdullah. With me this morning is Virata Taivasigamuni, the Executive Director of CSI Prop. So Virata, earlier, one of the risks you highlighted is the construction sector. Could you help us elaborate further on this issue?
Okay. So of course, I think one thing we're concerned about here is really the construction sector, I think, being more exposed to these challenges, right? So if we think of an example with the pound, I think that has dropped quite a fair bit. But when a lot of developers priced their properties and their cost several years back when the pound was stronger, they, of course, are having challenges today because material costs would have gone up, resources. There's also the threat to their labor. If labor is going to be affected with the European side or so on, that's going to spike up wages. And so that's going to all impact, at the end of the day, construction costs leading to delays, potentially even some developers or construction companies going out of business. In fact, we've seen that as well in the last few years as well, people having stress points and being affected by that side.
So the construction sector are more vulnerable today than before Brexit?
Yes, I would say when prices have changed because of the currency and so on, that's impacted their construction and development profits, right? So if you want to also plan for that, we've got to think of newer projects today are actually probably safer in a sense that they've priced the low, the weak pound over the last few years since the 2016 vote. But the groups that have actually launched projects, I think, before that, and you're seeing them coming to completion now, they've gone through that whole struggle period. And I would say that we've seen that because a number of projects that we've been involved in, we've seen delays, we've had challenges where developers had to put in new construction companies because some wouldn't bust. And there's definitely struggles on that side. So I think a key thing sometimes to look at, as we mentioned earlier, is the track record, the balance sheet of the developers, also deposit structures. Progressive payment projects where you have to fund the development are a bit more risky, whereas if you put 10, 20, 30% and the developer funds the rest, you're probably insulating yourself from a bit of risk. Or, of course, finally, maybe just buying completed properties and you don't have to worry about development risk.
Okay. Yeah. Let's move on to another subject, which is local sentiment. Brexit was a result of a nationalist movement within the UK. What is the sentiment surrounding foreign property ownerships? Is this something that investors should be concerned about?
Yeah, I think that this has started a while back, but of course, you know, probably intensified a little more with Brexit. I mean, traditionally, I think the locals, the Brits, have always felt that, you know, foreigners are coming in, buying up their properties, pushing up prices. A lot of these new launches of properties are often launched out in Asia and the Middle East or other places before they open up into the UK market itself. So there's been a bit of that resentment. And of course, people feeling that you know, they're taking advantage of, or the locals felt that. But there's a reality to that as well, that locals aren't going to buy properties 3 to 4 years before completion of the properties. And so many of them, you know, we'll end up only buying close to completion. So in a way, I think when they look at it further, I think the economists and the property people understand that actually the foreigners are helping create stock. We're actually funding these developers 3 to 4 years to completion. And then when it's completed, often it's the locals that end up renting it and the locals end up buying it or so on. So I would, of course, look at it as it's a nice balance of each helping one another. But of course, not everyone sees it that way.
Since you mentioned about tax, has there been changes in the tax policy with regards to foreign ownership?
Yes. There's been, I think, a lot of that over the last number of years. You know, going to Australia for a moment here, I think we've seen almost like 3 years in a row of tax increases for foreigners. First, there was a surcharge of about, in places like, say, Melbourne, about 3%, then the year after that, another 4%. The year after that, then they basically said, you know, we're going to tax them on the full value of the property versus pre-construction. So today there's a, you know, 12% surcharge in taxes or so on that foreign investors would have to pay going in. Of course, part of it is what locals pay as well. So I think governments all around the world are seeing that, you know, in times where interest rates are so low, people are investing and investing globally, and they all want a piece of the action. They're encouraging foreign investors to come in, but they want a piece of that. So the UK has also started talking about that. They haven't implemented it yet, but they've talked about, you know, taxing foreigners and increasing that stamp duties. The other part, I think, is also reliefs. So tax reliefs, I think, have also changed a little in the sense where we Malaysians have always had a benefit where in the past, about 11,000 pounds or so on that someone makes per year in the UK is tax-free. The Brits, of course, apply it to their salaries, but as foreign investors, often we don't have salaries or other income in the UK. So the moment you buy a property there, you apply that first 11,000 towards your rental income or so on. And so you make about 60,000 a year tax-free, and that's per person, right? So if it's husband and wife, it's double. But last year, that's also increased because every year with inflation and different changes or so on, they also increase that. So today, it's about 12,500. That's changed. And I think another fundamental issue about tax that's probably not so much about Brexit here, but I think it's often a misconception that we hear a lot and I thought I'd share, is that people often think that when they buy a property overseas and they get taxed there, and then they come back to Malaysia and then they have to pay another round of taxes, almost as though it's double taxation or so on.
Sure.
Right. But one of the beauties I think we Malaysians should celebrate is the fact that, you know, our government has always essentially taxed only Malaysian source income. Now, I'm not a tax professional.
Sure.
But I think anyone looking at that would be able to just realize that. So you pay taxes in the foreign jurisdiction, you bring it back to Malaysia and you don't pay taxes here.
So will these changes affect the yield significantly?
Well, I would say definitely there is an impact.
Sure,
of course,
sure.
The yield's affected. Mm. But in general, it's not much because we're talking about, a few percentage points or so on. And anyone buying into real estate would always have to take a long-term projection.
Okay.
If they're taking a short-term, buy and flip type scenario, then they're going to be more exposed. But on a long-term horizon, really, it's a slight impact, but not substantial itself. And of course, the other benefit about these taxes, as much as they're taxes up front, when you do sell your property, you actually can deduct them. And so it almost serves as a tax deduction at the end of the day that you offset when you sell.
Okay. Yeah. So this brings us to the next question. Are there sufficient regulation in place to protect investors in these countries?
I'd say they're protected to an extent, in the sense that, of course, yes, the developed countries with their own set of legal fundamentals and so on. So, yes, you have a process where you can get recourse. But at the end of the day, it's a bit of a messy situation, going through all those steps to organize. In Australia, I think it's slightly better protection in the sense that the governments have sort of regulated a standardized 10% deposit that sits in a trust account. So that means your money sits in trust. If anything happens, the lawyers will just refund that to you.
Okay.
In the UK, it's slightly more a bit of a Wild West, if I may say, in the sense that it's a willing buyer, willing seller. You can contract into anything. And so you've got a bit more careful on what the legal documents say. It's very important to ensure that you speak to certified legal practitioners in that country. Mm. We have a lot of clients who always say, I've talked to my friend who's a lawyer here in Malaysia. Well, the sets of laws are very different.
Okay.
And so you have to be careful there.
Does that mean that there is no precise rules and regulations to look out for when it comes to investing in properties in these countries?
I would say it's just different in the sense that they need to bring themselves up to speed. Unlike Malaysia, I mean, I should say it's no different than Malaysia in the sense that we have to file taxes in Malaysia. We have our legal requirements here and how contracts are done or so on. So they just have to familiarize themselves with that. And some people spend a bit more time doing that and appreciate the importance of it. Some don't. Often, of course, they rely on property agencies like ourselves to basically look at a lot of these things. And I would say it's very important when you speak to even property agencies, if you're relying on them, to ask them the tough questions and figure out what they know. There's a lot of people these days involved in property, but how much they actually do research, due diligence, it differs. We've got a guide that's very useful, I think, that puts and outlines, I think, a lot about taxation, stamp duties, financing, and so on. I would suggest, of course, people, get these kind of information before they actually make an investment.
Okay. So one final question before we conclude our discussion today. Do you have any advice to investors who are interested in investing properties abroad?
Yeah. I think key takeaways essentially at the end of the day comes down to, really understand the economic fundamentals beyond just what you read in the papers or so on. It's housing supply and demand, right? So first point, housing supply and demand. I think that the second one is, of course, we talk quite a fair bit about developer credibility, track record, and doing your research on that side. And of course, I think that the third one is
it's markets like right now, you know, where there's uncertainty, there's opportunity, right? I think you know, Warren Buffett says it best when he says, "Be greedy when others are foolish," and that I think just sums it all up because. Sure. Warren Buffett's not a foolish chap, but he does a lot of his research. And when he sees an opportunity and uncertainties, he takes advantage of that. And for us, I mean, I've just invested into the UK recently as well. I've just made another purchase. And I see the pound, of course, being a very, very attractive point. It's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to take advantage of that. But of course, I don't just buy anywhere in the UK. I look at the housing markets. I look at the developer's track record. And then, hey, you toss the coin, or the dice, I guess, as they say, and you know, some of it is research. Some of it comes down to luck as well.
Okay. Virata, thank you so much for sharing your insights with us today. You can also catch other discussions with Virata on investing properties abroad on our BFM app as well as Spotify. I've been speaking to Virata Thaivasigamoni, Executive Director of CSI Prop. This has been The Property Show on BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.